This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Heir of Fire, a Throne of Glass novel. Written by Sarah J. Maas. Narrated by Elizabeth Evans. Part 1. Heir of Ash. Chapter 1. Gods, it was boiling in this useless excuse for a kingdom. Or maybe it felt that way because Selena Sardothian had been lounging on the lip of the terracotta roof since mid-morning, an arm flung over her eyes, slowly baking in the sun like the loaves of flatbread the city's poorest citizens left on their windowsills because they couldn't afford brick ovens. And gods, she was sick of flatbread. Tegya, they called it. Sick of the crunchy, oniony taste of it that even mouthfuls of water couldn't wash away. If she never ate another bite of Tegya again, it would be too soon. Mostly because it was all she'd been able to afford when she landed in Wendland 2 weeks ago and made her way to the capital city, Verez, just as she'd been ordered by His Grand Imperial Majesty and Master of the Earth, the King of Otterlan. She'd resorted to swiping Tegya and wine off vendors' carts since her money ran out. Not long after she'd taken one look at the heavily fortified limestone castle, at the elite guards, at the cobalt banners flapping so proudly in the dry, hot wind, and decided not to kill her assigned targets. So it had been stolen Tegya and wine. The sour red wine from the vineyards lining the rolling hills around the walled capital, a taste she'd initially spat out but now very, very much enjoyed. Especially since the day when she decided that she didn't particularly care about anything at all. She reached for the terracotta tiles sloping behind her, groping for the clay jug of wine she'd hauled onto the roof that morning. Patting, feeling for it, and then she swore. Where in hell was the wine? The world tilted and went blindingly bright as she hoisted herself onto her elbows. Birds circled above, keeping well away from the white-tailed hawk that had been perched atop a nearby chimney all morning, waiting to snatch up its next meal. Below, the market street was a brilliant loom of color and sound, full of braying donkeys, merchants waving their wares, clothes both foreign and familiar, and the clacking of wheels against pale cobblestones. But where in hell was the... Ah, there. Tucked beneath one of the heavy red tiles to keep cool, just where she'd stashed it hours before, when she'd climbed onto the roof of the massive indoor market to survey the perimeter of the castle walls 2 blocks away, or whatever she'd thought sounded official and useful before she'd realized that she'd rather sprawl in the shadows. Shadows that had long since been burned away by that relentless Wendland sun. Selena swigged from the jug of wine, or tried to. It was empty, which she supposed was a blessing, because gods, her head was spinning. She needed water and more Tegya. And perhaps something for the gloriously painful split lip and scraped cheekbone she'd earned last night in one of the city's tabernas. Groaning, Selena rolled onto her belly and surveyed the street 40 feet below. She knew the guards patrolling it by now, had marked their faces and weapons, just as she had with the guards atop the high castle walls. She'd memorized their rotations and how they opened the 3 massive gates that led into the castle. It seemed that the Ash Rivers and their ancestors took safety very, very seriously. It had been 10 days since she'd arrived in Verez itself, after hauling ass from the coast. Not because she was particularly eager to kill her targets, but because the city was so damn large that it seemed her best chance of dodging the immigration officials, whom she'd given the slip instead of registering with their oh-so-benevolent work program. Hurrying to the capital had also provided welcome activity after weeks at sea, where she hadn't really felt like doing anything other than lying on the narrow bed in her cramped cabin, or sharpening her weapons with a near-religious zeal. "You're nothing but a coward," Nehemia had said to her. Every slice of the wedding stone had echoed it. Coward. 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 The word had trailed her each league across the ocean. She had made a vow to free Eelway. So in between moments of despair and rage and grief, in between thoughts of Kaol and the word keys and all she'd left behind and lost, Selena had decided on one plan to follow when she reached these shores. One plan, however insane and unlikely, to free the enslaved kingdom. Find and obliterate the word keys the King of Otterlin had used to build his terrible empire. She'd gladly destroy herself to carry it out. Just her. Just him. Just as it should be. No loss of life beyond their own. No soul stained but hers. It would take a monster to destroy a monster. If she had to be here thanks to Kaol's misplaced good intentions, then at least she'd receive the answers she needed. There was one person in Aurelia who had been present when the word keys were wielded by a conquering demon race that had warped them into three tools of such mighty power that they'd been hidden for thousands of years and nearly wiped from memory. Queen Maeve of the Fae. Maeve knew everything, as was expected when you were older than dirt. So the first step of her stupid, foolish plan had been simple. Seek out Maeve, get answers about how to destroy the word keys, and then return to Otterlin. It was the least she could do. For Nehemia. For a lot of other people. There was nothing left in her. Not really. Only ash and an abyss, and the unbreakable vow she'd carved into her flesh, to the friend who had seen her for what she truly was. When they had docked at the largest port city in Wendland, she couldn't help but admire the caution the ship took while coming to shore, waiting until a moonless night, then stuffing Selena and the other refugee women from Otterlin in the galley, while navigating the secret channels through the barrier reef. It was understandable. The reef was the main defense keeping Otterlin's legions from these shores. It was also part of her mission here as the king's champion. That was the other task lingering in the back of her mind. To find a way to keep the king from executing Kaol or Nehemia's family. He'd promised to do it, should she fail in her mission to retrieve Wendland's naval defense plans and assassinate its king and prince at their annual midsummer ball. But she'd shoved all those thoughts aside when they'd docked, and the refugee women had been herded ashore for processing by the port's officials. Many of the women were scarred inside and out, their eyes gleaming with echoes of whatever horrors had befallen them in Otterlin. So even after she'd vanished from the ship during the chaos of docking, she'd lingered on a nearby rooftop while the women were escorted into a building to find homes and employment. Yet Wendland's officials could later bring them to a quiet part of the city and do whatever they wanted. Sell them, hurt them. They were refugees, unwanted and without any rights, without any voice. But she hadn't lingered merely from paranoia. No, Nehemia would have remained to ensure they were safe. Realizing that, Selena had wound up on the road to the capital as soon as she was certain the women were all right. Learning how to infiltrate the castle was merely something to occupy her time while she decided how to execute the first steps of her plan, while she tried to stop thinking about Nehemia. It had all been fine, fine and easy, hiding in the little woods and barns along the way. She passed like a shadow through the countryside. Wendlin, a land of myths and monsters, of legends and nightmares made flesh. The kingdom itself was a spread of warm, rocky sand and thick forest, growing ever greener as hills rolled inland and sharpened into towering peaks. The coast and the land around the capital were dry, as if the sun had baked all but the hardiest vegetation. Vastly different from the soggy, frozen empire she'd left behind. A land of plenty, of opportunity, where men didn't just take what they wanted, where no doors were locked and people smiled at you in the streets. But she didn't particularly care if someone did or didn't smile at her. No, as the days wore on, she found it suddenly very difficult to bring herself to care about anything at all. Whatever determination, whatever rage, whatever anything she'd felt upon leaving Otterlin, had ebbed away, devoured by the nothingness that now gnawed at her. It was 4 days before Selena spotted the massive capital city built across the foothills. Verez, the city where her mother had been born, the vibrant heart of the kingdom. While Verez was cleaner than Rifthold and had plenty of wealth spread between the upper and lower classes, it was a capital city all the same, with slums and back alleys, whores and gamblers, and it hadn't taken too long to find its underbelly. On the street below, three of the market guards paused to chat, and Selena rested her chin on her hands. Like every guard in this kingdom, each was clad in light armor and bore a good number of weapons. Rumor claimed the Wendlinite soldiers were trained by the Fae to be ruthless and cunning and swift. And she didn't want to know if that was true, for about a dozen different reasons. They certainly seemed a good deal more observant than the average Rifthold sentry, even if they hadn't yet noticed the assassin in their midst. But these days, Selena knew the only threat she posed was to herself. Even baking in the sun each day, even washing up whenever she could in one of the city's many fountain squares, she could still feel Archer Finn's blood soaking her skin, into her hair. Even with the constant noise and rhythm of Verez, she could still hear Archer's groan as she gutted him in that tunnel beneath the castle. And even with the wine and heat, she could still see Kaol, horror contorting his face at what he'd learned about her Fae heritage, and the monstrous power that could easily destroy her, about how hollow and dark she was inside. She often wondered whether he'd figure out the riddle she'd told him on the docks of Rifthold, and if he had discovered the truth. Selena never let herself get that far. Now wasn't the time for thinking about Kaol, or the truth, or any of the things that had left her soul so limp and weary. Selena tenderly prodded her split lip and frowned at the market guards, the movement making her mouth hurt even more. She deserved that particular blow, in the brawl she'd provoked in last night's taberna. She'd kicked a man's balls into his throat, and when he'd caught his breath, he'd been enraged, to say the least. Lowering her hand from her mouth, she observed the guards for a few moments. They didn't take bribes from the merchants, or bully, or threaten with fines like the guards and officials in Rifthold. Every official and soldier she'd seen so far had been similarly good. The same way Galen Ashriver, Crown Prince of Wendlin, was good. Dredging up some semblance of annoyance, Selena stuck out her tongue. At the guards, at the market, at the hawk on the nearby chimney, at the castle and the prince who lived inside it. She wished that she had not run out of wine so early in the day. It had been a week since she'd figured out how to infiltrate the castle, 3 days after arriving in Verez itself. A week since that horrible day when all her plans crumbled around her. A cooling breeze pushed past, bringing with it the spices from the vendors lining the nearby street. Nutmeg, thyme, cumin, lemon verbena. She inhaled deeply, letting the scents clear her sun and wine-addled head. The pealing of bells floated down from one of the neighboring mountain towns, and in some square of the city, a minstrel band struck up a merry midday tune. Nehemia would have loved this place. That fast, the world slipped, swallowed up by the abyss that now lived within her. Nehemia would never see Wendlin, never wander through the spice market or hear the mountain bells. A dead weight pressed on Selena's chest. It had seemed like such a perfect plan when she'd arrived in Varez. In the hours she'd spent figuring out the royal castle's defenses, she'd debated how she'd find Maeve to learn about the keys. It had all been going smoothly, flawlessly, until that God's damned day when she'd noted how the guards left a hole in their defense in the southern wall every afternoon at 2 o'clock, and grasped how the gate mechanism operated. Until Galen Ashriver had come riding out through those gates, in full view of where she'd been perched on the roof of a nobleman's house. It hadn't been the sight of him, with his olive skin and dark hair, that had stopped her dead. It hadn't been the fact that, even from a distance, she could see his turquoise eyes. Her eyes, the reason she usually wore a hood in the streets. No. It had been the way people cheered. Cheered for him, their prince. Adored him, with his dashing smile and his light armor gleaming in the endless sun, as he and the soldiers behind him rode toward the north coast to continue blockade running. Blockade running. The prince, her target, was a God's damned blockade runner against Otterlin, and his people loved him for it. She trailed the prince and his men through the city, leaping from rooftop to rooftop, and all it would have taken was one arrow through those turquoise eyes and he would have been dead. But she followed him all the way to the city walls, the cheers growing louder, people tossing flowers, everyone beaming with pride for their perfect, perfect prince. She'd reached the city gates just as they opened to let him through. And when Galen Ashriver rode off into the sunset, off to war and glory and to fight for good and freedom, she lingered on that roof until he was a speck in the distance. Then she had walked into the nearest taberna and gotten into the bloodiest, most brutal brawl she'd ever provoked, until the city guard was called in, and she vanished moments before everyone was tossed into the stocks. And then she had decided, as her nose bled down the front of her shirt and she spat blood onto the cobblestones, that she wasn't going to do anything. There was no point to her plans. Nehemia and Galen would have led the world to freedom, and Nehemia should have been breathing. Together, the prince and princess could have defeated the king of Otterlin. But Nehemia was dead, and Selena's vow, her stupid, pitiful vow, was worth as much as mud when there were beloved heirs like Galen who could do so much more. She'd been a fool to make that vow. Even Galen was barely making a dent against Otterlin, and he had an entire armada at his disposal. She was one person, one complete waste of life. If Nehemia hadn't been able to stop the king, then that plan, to find a way to contact Maeve, that plan was absolutely useless. Mercifully, she still hadn't seen one of the Fae, not a single damn one, or the Faeries, or even a lick of magic. She'd done her best to avoid it. Even before she'd spotted Galen, she'd kept away from the market stalls that offered everything from healing to trinkets to potions, areas that were usually also full of street performers or mercenaries trading their gifts to earn a living. She'd learned which tabernas the magic wielders liked to frequent, and never went near them. Because sometimes, she felt a trickling, writhing thing awaken in her gut if she caught a crackle of its energy. It had been a week since she'd given up her plan and abandoned any attempt to care at all, and she suspected it'd be many weeks more before she decided she was truly sick of Tegya, or brawling every night just to feel something, or guzzling sour wine as she lay on rooftops all day. But her throat was parched, and her stomach was grumbling, so Selena slowly peeled herself off the edge of the roof. Slowly, not because of those vigilant guards, but rather because her head was well and truly spinning. She didn't trust herself to care enough to prevent a tumble. She glared at the thin scar stretching across her palm, as she shimmied down the drainpipe and into the alley off the market street. It was now nothing more than a reminder of the pathetic promise she'd made at Nehemia's half-frozen grave over a month ago, and of everything and everyone else she'd failed. Just like her amethyst ring, which she'd gambled away every night and won back before sunrise. Despite all that had happened, and Kaol's role in Nehemia's death, even after she'd destroyed what was between them, she hadn't been able to forfeit his ring. She'd lost it thrice now in card games, only to get it back, by whatever means necessary. A dagger poised to slip between the ribs usually did a good deal more convincing than actual words. Selena supposed it was a miracle she'd made it down to the alley, where the shadows momentarily blinded her. She braced a hand on the cool stone wall, letting her eyes adjust, willing her head to stop spinning. A mess. She was a god's damned mess. She wondered when she'd bother to stop being one. The tang and reek of the woman hit Selena before she saw her. Then wide, yellowed eyes were in her face, and a pair of withered, cracked lips parted to hiss, "Slattern, don't let me catch you in front of my door again!" Selena pulled back, blinking at the vagrant woman, and at her door, which was just an alcove in the wall, crammed with rubbish and what had to be sacks of the woman's belongings. The woman herself was hunched, her hair unwashed and teeth a ruin of stumps. Selena blinked again, the woman's face coming into focus. Furious, half mad, and filthy. Selena held up her hands, backing away a step, then another. "Sorry." The woman spat a wad of phlegm onto the cobblestones an inch from Selena's dusty boots. Failing to muster the energy to be disgusted or furious, Selena would have walked away, had she not glimpsed herself as she raised her dull gaze from the glob. Dirty clothes, stained and dusty and torn. Not to mention she smelled atrocious, and this vagrant woman had mistaken her for a fellow vagrant competing for space on the streets. Well, wasn't that just wonderful? An all-time low, even for her. Perhaps it'd be funny one day if she bothered to remember it. She couldn't recall the last time she'd laughed. At least she could take some comfort in knowing that it couldn't get worse. But then, a deep male voice chuckled from the shadows behind her. Chapter 2. The man, male, down the alley was Fay. After 10 years, after all the executions and burnings, a Fay male was prowling toward her. Pure, solid Fay. There was no escaping him as he emerged from the shadows yards away. The vagrant in the alcove and the others along the alley fell so quiet, Selena could again hear those bells ringing in the distant mountains. Tall, broad-shouldered, every inch of him seemingly corded with muscle, he was a male blooded with power. He paused in a dusty shaft of sunlight, his silver hair gleaming. As if his delicately pointed ears and slightly elongated canines weren't enough to scare the living shit out of everyone in that alley, including the now whimpering madwoman behind Selena, a wicked-looking tattoo was etched down the left side of his harsh face, the whorls of black ink stark against his sun-kissed skin. The markings could easily have been decorative, but she still remembered enough of the Fey language to recognize them as words, even in such an artistic rendering. Starting at his temple, the tattoo flowed over his jaw and down his neck, where it disappeared beneath the pale surcoat and cloak he wore. She had a feeling the markings continued down the rest of him, too, concealed along with at least half a dozen weapons. As she reached into her cloak for her own hidden dagger, she realized he might have been handsome, were it not for the promise of violence in his pine-green eyes. It would have been a mistake to call him young, just as it would have been a mistake to call him anything but a warrior, even without the sword strapped across his back and the vicious knives at his sides. He moved with lethal grace and surety, scanning the alley as if he were walking onto a killing field. The hilt of the dagger was warm in her hand, and Selena adjusted her stance, surprised to be feeling fear, and enough of it that it cleared the heavy fog that had been clouding her senses these past few weeks. The Fey warrior stalked down the alley, his knee-high leather boots silent on the cobblestones. Some of the loiterers shrank back. Some bolted for the sunny street, to random doorways, anywhere to escape his challenging stare. Selena knew before his sharp eyes met hers that he was here for her, and who had sent him. She reached for her eye amulet, startled to find it was no longer around her neck. She'd given it to Kaol, the only bit of protection she could grant him upon leaving. He'd probably thrown it away as soon as he figured out the truth. Then he could go back to the haven of being her enemy. Maybe he'd tell Dorian, too, and the pair of them would both be safe. Before she could give in to the instinct to scuttle back up the drainpipe and onto the roof, she considered the plan she'd abandoned. Had some god remembered she existed and decided to throw her a bone? She'd needed to see Maeve. Well, here was one of Maeve's elite warriors, ready, waiting. And from the vicious temper emanating from him, not entirely happy about it. The alley remained as still as a graveyard while the Fey warrior surveyed her. His nostrils flared delicately, as if he was getting a whiff of her scent. She took some small satisfaction in knowing she smelled horrific, but it wasn't that smell he was reading. No. It was the scent that marked her as her. The smell of her lineage and blood and what and who she was. And if he said her name in front of these people, then she knew that Galen Ashriver would come running home. The guards would be on high alert. And that was not part of her plan at all. The bastard looked likely to do such a thing, just to prove who was in charge. So she summoned her energy as best she could, and sauntered over to him, trying to remember what she might have done months ago, before the world had gone to hell. "Well met, my friend," she purred. "Well met indeed." She ignored the shocked faces around them, focusing solely on sizing him up. He stood with a stillness that only an immortal could achieve. She willed her heartbeat and breathing to calm. He could probably hear them, could probably smell every emotion raging through her. There'd be no fooling him with bravado, not in 1,000 years. He'd probably lived that long already. Perhaps there'd be no beating him either. She was Selena Sardothian, but he was a Fey warrior and had likely been one for a great while. She stopped a few feet away. Gods, he was huge. "What a lovely surprise," she said loudly enough for everyone to hear. When was the last time she'd sounded that pleasant? She couldn't even remember the last time she'd spoken in full sentences. "I thought we were supposed to meet at the city walls." He didn't bow, thank the gods. His harsh face didn't even shift. Let him think what he wanted. She was sure she looked nothing like what he'd been told to expect. And he'd certainly laughed when that woman mistook her for a fellow vagrant.
"Let's go,"
was all he said, his deep, somewhat bored voice seeming to echo off the stones as he turned to leave the alley. She'd bet good money that the leather vambraces on his forearms concealed blades. She might have given him a rather obnoxious reply, just to feel him out a bit more. But people were still watching. He prowled along, not deigning to look at any of the gawkers. She couldn't tell if she was impressed or revolted. She followed the Fey warrior into the bright street and through the bustling city. He was heedless of the humans who paused their working and walking and milling about to stare. He certainly didn't wait for her to catch up as he strode up to a pair of ordinary mares tied by a trough in a nondescript square. If her memory served her correctly, the Fey usually possessed far finer horses. He had probably arrived in another form and purchased these here. All Fey possessed a secondary animal form. Selena was currently in hers, her mortal human body as animal as the birds wheeling above. But what was his? He could have been a wolf, she thought, with that layered surcoat that flowed to mid-thigh like a pelt, his footfalls so silent. Or a mountain cat with that predatory grace. He mounted the larger of the mares, leaving her to the piebald beast that looked more interested in seeking out a quick meal than trekking across the land. That made two of them. But they'd gone far enough without any explanation. She stuffed her satchel into a saddlebag, angling her hands so that her sleeves hid the narrow bands of scars on her wrists, reminders of where the manacles had been, where she had been. It was none of his business, none of Maeve's business either. The less they knew about her, the less they could use against her. I've known a few brooding warrior types in my day, but I think you might be the broodiest of them all. He whipped his head to her, and she drawled, "Oh, hello. I think you know who I am, so I won't bother introducing myself. But before I'm carted off to God's nowhere, I'd like to know who you are." His lips thinned. He surveyed the square, where people were now watching, and everyone instantly found somewhere else to be. When they'd scattered, he said, "You've gathered enough about me at this point to have learned what you need to know." He spoke the common tongue, and his accent was subtle, lovely if she was feeling generous enough to admit it. A soft, rolling purr. "Fair enough, but what am I to call you?" She gripped the saddle but didn't mount it.
"Rowan."
His tattoo seemed to soak up the sun, so dark it looked freshly inked. "Well, Rowan..." Oh, he did not like her tone one bit. His eyes narrowed slightly in warning, but she went on. "Dare I ask where we're going?" She had to be drunk. Still drunk or descending to a new level of apathy if she was talking to him like this. But she couldn't stop. Even as the gods or the word or the threads of fate readied to shove her back toward her original plan of action...
"I'm taking you where you've been summoned."
As long as she got to see Maeve and ask her questions, she didn't particularly care how she got to Dorinel, or whom she traveled with. "Do what has to be done," Elena had told her. In her usual fashion, Elena had omitted to specify what had to be done once she arrived in Wendlin. At least this was better than eating flatbread and drinking wine and being mistaken for a vagrant. Perhaps she could be on a boat back to Otterlin within 3 weeks, possessing the answers that would solve everything. It should have energized her. But instead, she found herself silently mounting her mare, out of words and the will to use them. Just the past few minutes of interaction had drained her completely. It was better that Rowan didn't seem inclined to speak as she followed him out of the city. The guards merely waved them through the walls, some even backing away. As they rode on, Rowan didn't ask why she was here or what she'd been doing for the past 10 years while the world had gone to hell. He pulled his pale hood over his silver hair and moved ahead, though it was still easy enough to mark him as different, as a warrior and law unto himself. If he was truly as old as she suspected, She was likely little more than a speck of dust to him. A fizzle of life in the long, burning fire of his immortality. He could probably kill her without a second thought, and then move on to his next task, utterly untroubled by ending her existence. It didn't unnerve her as much as it should have. Chapter 3. For a month now, it had been the same dream. Every night, over and over, until Kaol could see it in his waking hours. Archer Finn groaning as Selena shoved her dagger up through his ribs and into his heart. She embraced the handsome courtesan like a lover, but when she gazed over Archer's shoulder, her eyes were dead, hollow. The dream shifted, and Kaol could say nothing, do nothing, as the golden brown hair darkened to black, and the agonized face wasn't Archer's, but Dorian's. The crown prince jerked, and Selena held him tighter, twisting the dagger one final time before she let Dorian slump to the gray stones of the tunnel. Dorian's blood was already pooling, too fast. But Kaol still couldn't move, couldn't go to his friend or the woman he loved. The wounds on Dorian multiplied, and there was blood. So much blood. He knew these wounds. Though he'd never seen the body, he'd combed through the reports detailing what Selena had done to the rogue assassin Grave in that alley. The way she'd butchered him for killing Nehemia. Selena lowered her dagger, each drop of blood from its gleaming blade sending ripples through the pool already around her. She tipped back her head, breathing in deep, breathing in the death before her, taking it into her soul, vengeance and ecstasy mingling at the slaughter of her enemy. Her true enemy, the Havilliard Empire. The dream shifted again, and Kaol was pinned beneath her as she writhed above him, her head still thrown back, that same expression of ecstasy written across her blood-splattered face. Enemy. Lover. Queen. The memory of the dream splintered as Kaol blinked at Dorian, who was sitting beside him at their old table in the Great Hall, and waiting for an answer to whatever he had said. Kaol gave an apologetic wince. The crown prince didn't return Kaol's half-smile. Instead, Dorian quietly said, "You were thinking about her." Kaol took a bite from his lamb stew, but tasted nothing. Dorian was too observant for his own good, and Kaol had no interest in talking about Selena. Not with Dorian, not with anyone. The truth he knew about her could jeopardize more lives than hers.
"I was thinking about my father," Kaol lied. "When he returns to Aniel in a few weeks, I'm to go with him."
It was the price for getting Selena to the safety of Wendlin. His father's support in exchange for his return to the Silver Lake to take up his title as the heir of Aniel. And he'd been willing to make that sacrifice. He'd make any sacrifice to keep Selena and her secret safe. Even now that he knew who, what she was. Even after she'd told him about the king and the word keys. If this was the price he had to pay, so be it. Dorian glanced toward the high table, where the king and Kaol's father dined. The crown prince should have been eating with them, but he'd chosen to sit with Kaol instead. It was the first time Dorian had done so in ages. The first time they had spoken since their tense conversation after the decision was made to send Selena to Wendlin. Dorian would understand if he knew the truth. But Dorian couldn't know who and what Selena was, or what the king was truly planning. The potential for disaster was too high. And Dorian's own secrets were deadly enough.
"I heard the rumors you were to go,"
Dorian said warily.
I didn't realize they were true.
Kaol nodded, trying to find something, anything, to say to his friend. They still hadn't spoken of the other thing between them, the other bit of truth that had come out that night in the tunnels. Dorian had magic. Kaol didn't want to know anything about it. If the king decided to interrogate him, he hoped he'd hold out, if it ever came to that. The king, he knew, had far darker methods of extracting information than torture. So he hadn't asked, hadn't said one word. And neither had Dorian. He met Dorian's gaze. There was nothing kind in it. But Dorian said,
"I'm trying, Kaol."
Trying because Kaol's not consulting him on the plan to get Selena out of Otterlin had been a breach of trust, and one that shamed him, though Dorian could never know that either.
"I know.
And despite what happened, I'm fairly certain we're not enemies." Dorian's mouth quirked to the side. "You will always be my enemy." Selena had screamed those words at Kaol the night Nehemia had died. Screamed it with 10 years' worth of conviction and hatred. A decade spent holding the world's greatest secret so deep within her that she had become another person entirely. Because Selena was Aelin Ashriver Galathinius, heir to the throne and rightful queen of Terrasen. It made her his mortal enemy. It made her Dorian's enemy. Kaol still didn't know what to do about it, or what it meant for them, for the life he'd imagined for them. The future he'd once dreamed of was irrevocably gone. He'd seen the deadness in her eyes that night in the tunnels, along with the wrath and exhaustion and sorrow. He'd seen her go over the edge when Nehemia died, and knew what she'd done to Grave in retribution. He didn't doubt for one heartbeat that she could snap again. There was such glittering darkness in her, an endless rift straight through her core. Nehemia's death had shattered her. What he had done, his role in that death, had shattered her too. He knew that. He just prayed that she could piece herself back together again. Because a broken, unpredictable assassin was one thing, but a queen. "You look like you're going to be sick," Dorian said, bracing his forearms on the table. "Tell me what's wrong." Kaol had been staring at nothing again. For a heartbeat, the weight of everything pressed so heavily upon him that he opened up his mouth. But the boom of swords striking shields in salute echoed from the hallway. And Adian Ashriver, the king of Otterlin's infamous general of the north and cousin to Aelin Galathinius, stalked into the great hall. The hall fell silent, including his father and the king at the high table. Before Adian was halfway across the room, Kaol was positioned at the bottom of the dais. It wasn't that the young general was a threat. Rather, it was the way Adian prowled toward the king's table, his shoulder-length golden hair gleaming in the torchlight as he smirked at them all. Handsome was a light way of describing what Adian was. Overwhelming was more like it. Towering and heavily muscled, Adian was every inch the warrior rumor claimed him to be. Even though his clothes were mostly for function, Kaol could tell that the leather of his light armor was of fine make and exquisitely detailed. A white wolf pelt was slung across his broad shoulders, and a round shield had been strapped to his back, along with an ancient-looking sword. But his face, and his eyes, holy gods. Kaol put a hand on his sword, schooling his features to remain neutral, disinterested, even as the wolf of the north came close enough to slaughter him. They were Selena's eyes. Ashriver eyes.
a stunning turquoise with a core of gold as bright as their hair. Their hair. Even the shade of it was the same. They could have been twins, if Adian wasn't 24 and tanned from years in the snow-bright mountains of Terrasen. Why had the king bothered to keep Adian alive all those years ago? Why bother to forge him into one of his fiercest generals? Adian was a prince of the Ash River royal line, and had been raised in the Galathinius household. And yet he served the king. Adian's grin remained, as he stooped before the high table and sketched a bow shallow enough that Kaol was momentarily stunned.
"Majesty," the general said, those damning eyes alight.
Kaol looked at the high table to see if the king, if anyone, noticed the similarities that could doom not only Adian, but also Kaol and Dorian and everyone he cared about. His father just gave him a small, satisfied smile. But the king was frowning.
"I expected you a month ago."
Adian actually had the nerve to shrug. "Apologies, the staghorns were slammed with a final winter storm. I left when I could." Every person in the hall held their breath. Adian's temper and insolence were near legendary, part of the reason he was stationed in the far reaches of the north. Kaol had always thought it wise to keep him far from Rifthold, especially as Adian seemed to be a bit of a two-faced bastard, and the Bane, Adian's legion, was notorious for its skill and brutality. But now, why had the king summoned him to the capital? The king picked up his goblet, swirling the wine inside.
"I didn't receive word that your legion was here."
"They're not." Kaol braced for the execution order, praying he wouldn't be the one to do it. The king said,
"I told you to bring them, General."
"Here I was, thinking you wanted the pleasure of my company." When the king growled, Adian said, "They'll be here within a week or so. I didn't want to miss any of the fun." Adian again shrugged those massive shoulders.
"At least I didn't come empty-handed."
He snapped his fingers behind him, and a page rushed in, bearing a large satchel.
"Gifts from the north, courtesy of the last rebel camp we sacked. You'll enjoy them."
The king rolled his eyes and waved a hand at the page.
"Send them to my chambers. Your gifts, Adian, tend to offend polite company."
A low chuckle. From Adian, from some men at the king's table. Oh, Adian was dancing a dangerous line. At least Selena had the good sense to keep her mouth shut around the king. Considering the trophies the king had collected from Selena as champion, the items in that satchel wouldn't be mere gold and jewels. But to collect heads and limbs from Adian's own people, Selena's people.
"I have a council meeting tomorrow. I want you there, General," the king said.
Adian put a hand on his chest. "Your will is mine, Majesty." Kaol had to clamp down on his terror as he beheld what glinted on Adian's finger. A black ring. The same that the king, Parrington, and most of those under their control wore. That explained why the king allowed the insolence. When it came down to it, the king's will truly was Adian's. Kaol kept his face blank as the king gave him a curt nod, dismissal. Kaol silently bowed, now all too eager to get back to his table. Away from the king, from the man who held the fate of their world in his bloodied hands. Away from his father, who saw too much. Away from the general, who was now making his rounds through the hall, clapping men on the shoulder, winking at women. Kaol had mastered the horror roiling in his gut by the time he sank back into his seat and found Dorian frowning.
"Gifts indeed," the prince muttered. "Gods, he's insufferable."
Kaol didn't disagree. Despite the king's black ring, Adian still seemed to have a mind of his own, and was as wild off the battlefield as he was on it. He usually made Dorian look like a celibate when it came to finding debauched ways to amuse himself. Kaol had never spent much time with Adian, nor wanted to. But Dorian had known him for some time now. Since they'd met as children. When Dorian and his father had visited Terrasen in the days before the royal family was slaughtered. When Dorian had met Aelin. Met Selena. It was good that Selena wasn't here to see what Adian had become. Not just because of the ring. To turn on your own people. Adian slid onto the bench across from them, grinning. A predator assessing prey. You two were sitting at this same table the last time I saw you. Good to know some things don't change. Gods, that face. It was Selena's face, the other side of the coin. The same arrogance, the same unchecked anger. But where Selena crackled with it, Adian seemed to pulse. And there was something nastier, far more bitter in Adian's face. Dorian rested his forearms on the table and gave a lazy smile. Hello, Adian. Adian ignored him and reached for a roast leg of lamb, his black ring glinting. I like the new scar, Captain, he said, jerking his chin toward the slender white line across Kaol's cheek. The scar Selena had given to him the night Nehemia died and she'd tried to kill him. Now a permanent reminder of everything he'd lost. Adian went on. Looks like they didn't chew you up just yet. And they finally gave you a big boy sword, too. Dorian said, I'm glad to see that storm didn't dim your spirits. Weeks inside with nothing to do but train and bed women? It was a miracle I bothered to come down from the mountains. I didn't realize you bothered to do anything unless it served your best interests. A low laugh. There's that charming Havilyard spirit. Adian dug into his meal, and Kaol was about to demand why he was bothering to sit with them, other than to torment them as he'd always liked to do when the king wasn't looking. When he noticed that Dorian was staring, not at Adian's sheer size or armor, but at his face, at his eyes.
Shouldn't you be at some party or other?
Kaol said to Adian.
I'm surprised you're lingering when your usual enticements await in the city. Is that your courtly way of asking for an invitation to my gathering tomorrow, Captain? Surprising. You've always implied that you were above my sort of party.
Those turquoise eyes narrowed, and he gave Dorian a sly grin.
You, however... The last party I threw worked out very well for you. Red-headed twins, if I recall correctly.
You'll be disappointed to learn I've moved on from that sort of existence, Dorian said. Adian dug back into his meal.
More for me, then.
Kaol clenched his fists under the table. Selena had not exactly been virtuous in the past 10 years, but she'd never killed a natural-born citizen of Terrasen. Had refused to, actually. And Adian had always been a god's damned bastard. But now... Did he know what he wore on his finger? Did he know that despite his arrogance, his defiance and insolence, the king could make him bend to his will whenever he pleased? He couldn't warn Adian... Not without potentially getting himself and everyone he cared about killed, should Adian truly have allegiance to the king.
How are things in Terrasen?
Kaol asked, because Dorian was studying Adian again.
What would you like me to tell you? That we are well fed after a brutal winter? That we did not lose many to sickness?
Adian snorted.
I suppose hunting rebels is always fun, if you've a taste for it. Hopefully His Majesty has summoned the Bane to the south to finally give them some real action.
As Adian reached for the water, Kaol glimpsed the hilt of his sword. Dull metal flecked with dings and scratches, its pommel nothing more than a bit of cracked, rounded horn. Such a simple, plain sword for one of the greatest warriors in Aurelia.
The Sword of Orinth, Adian drawled. A gift from His Majesty upon my first victory.
Everyone knew that sword. It had been an heirloom of Terrasen's royal family, passed from ruler to ruler. By right, it was Selena's. It had belonged to her father. For Adian to possess it, considering what that sword now did, the lives it took, was a slap in the face to Selena and to her family.
I'm surprised you bother with such sentimentality, Dorian said. Symbols have power, Prince,
Adian said, pinning him with a stare. Selena's stare, unyielding and alive with challenge.
You'd be surprised by the power this still wields in the North. What it does to convince people not to pursue foolhardy plans.
Perhaps Selena's skills and cunning weren't unusual in her bloodline. But Adian was an Ash River, not a Galathinius, which meant that his great-grandmother had been Mab, one of the three Fae Queens, in recent generations crowned a goddess and renamed Deanna Lady of the Hunt. Kaol swallowed hard. Silence fell, taut as a bowstring.
Trouble between you two?
Adian asked, biting into his meat.
Let me guess. A woman. The king's champion, perhaps? Rumor has it she's interesting. Is that why you've moved on from my sort of fun, princeling?
He scanned the hall.
I'd like to meet her, I think.
Kaol fought the urge to grip his sword.
She's away.
Adian instead gave Dorian a cruel smile.
Pity. Perhaps she might have convinced me to move on as well.
Mind your mouth,
Kaol snarled. He might have laughed had he not wanted to strangle the general so badly. Dorian merely drummed his fingers on the table.
And show some respect.
Adian chuckled, finishing off the lamb.
I am His Majesty's faithful servant, as I have always been.
Those Ash River eyes once more settled on Dorian.
Perhaps I'll be your whore someday, too.
If you're still alive by then,
Dorian purred. Adian went on eating, but Kaol could still feel his relentless focus pinned on them.
Rumor has it a matron of a witch clan was killed on the premises not too long ago,
Adian said casually.
She vanished, though her quarters indicated she'd put up a hell of a fight.
Dorian said sharply,
What's your interest in that?
I make it my business to know when the power brokers of the realm meet their end.
A shiver spider-walked down Kaol's spine. He knew little about the witches. Selena had told him a few stories, and he'd always prayed they were exaggerated. But something like dread flickered across Dorian's face. Kaol leaned forward.
It's none of your concern.
Adian again ignored him and winked at the prince. Dorian's nostrils flared, the only sign of the rage that was rising to the surface. That, and the air in the room shifted. Brisker. Magic. Kaol put a hand on his friend's shoulder.
We're going to be late,
he lied, but Dorian caught it. He had to get Dorian out, away from Adian, and try to leash the disastrous storm that was brewing between the two men.
Rest well, Adian.
Dorian didn't bother saying anything, his sapphire eyes frozen. Adian smirked